Chapter 35. The Key to Purification. The eighth book of Hermes is a profound jubilation over all that can be beheld by the soul when soul consciousness has been achieved. There are many things in the nature of death that cannot be accounted for by the nature of death itself, but which give us images of God's wondrous manifestation. All these things can be seen as soon as the soul consciousness, the eyes of the spirit soul, have been acquired. What is essentially God's manifestation in dialectical nature is surrounded and imprisoned by petrification, and so operates wholly or partially in the wrong way. However, the essence of God speaks in the whole of manifested nature, even down to the spheres of hell. The holy language of all times testifies of this, but people of this world have for the most part not understood it. They thought and continue to think that nature, as perceived by the dialectical consciousness and sensory perception, gives full expression to God's intention, even in the conflict of antitheses, in the terrible ferocity and bestiality to be found in nature. Earthly man believes that this is the nature, God's intention, and that it should therefore be imitated. It is not only the religious man who desecrates God in this way, but also the man of science. Just think of the biologist who investigates life as it appears in nature and is carried away in his enthusiasm for it. But the holy language and the universal doctrine always indicate that true activities can be seen only with the eyes of the spirit soul, the eyes of the soul consciousness. Only then can one distinguish what is essential and discover its inherent meaning, and then it will also be possible to determine how and to what extent this counter nature has caused degeneration. So it becomes clear how desirable and even necessary it is to possess the eyes of the soul and to be able to distinguish between what is essential and what is not. We therefore repeat the warning with respect to the eighth book of Hermes. This book can be understood only on the level of the soul-born man. We must now strip Gnostic development of its mystic guise and realize that there can be no real culture of mankind before the soul has been born and has met its Pimander. Only then will man have turned back and climbed to the beginning of what is truly human. Only then will it have become possible to walk the path of evolution. Only after the birth of the soul will it be possible for the personality in the microcosm, which is freed through transfiguration from all crystallization and death, to enter God's absolute eternity. Soul consciousness is a necessity if one wants real cultural development and wants to continue on the path without any detours. If you remember our discussion about the state of infancy of the dialectical intellect and the uselessness and even the dangers associated with dialectical memory, you will certainly accept the need of possessing such a faultlessly operating new sensory organ. A Gnostic group like that of the young Gnosis might be asked, why are the eyes of the soul not yet open in many of you? Why has this guide to life not yet been born in you? We have already pointed out that, after soul birth and self-surrender to the living body, death will be overcome, and we would now like to state that many pupils have entered soul birth, that many of them have quite a lot of soul quality, and that self-surrender to the living body, without any reservations, will make them experience eternity in time. However, this state of being is not yet the desired one. To be a child of God, with the emphasis in this case on the word child, is not the final aim. This state of childhood can change into adulthood only by the opening of the eyes of the soul, consciousness. The question is, why, in spite of such great potential, have many pupils nevertheless not as yet been able to welcome the new dawn? The reason is that until now they have paid insufficient attention to the great conflict which occurs in the average person between the cerebrum, the upper part of the brain, and the cerebellum, the lower dorsally projecting part of the brain. In other words, there is not sufficient order or no order at all between the psychological and the physiological processes in the body. Or in yet other words, there is a permanent struggle in them between the psyche and the soma, between the soul and the body. The ordinary person of this nature does not experience this conflict because his psyche, his animal soul, and his body are perfectly one. In the system of the average pupil of a Gnostic spiritual school, there is no such unity. On the contrary, in the pupil, there is a conflict between the psyche on the one hand and the body on the other. Such a conflict increases continually because of his soul renewal. If you have dwelt for some time in the living body of the young Gnosis, if for some months or years, you have been orientated with us towards the grace of the Gnosis, it is certain that the new soul fluid has been secreted within you, or at least that it occurs in your blood. From that moment on, a steadily increasing conflict develops between your soul condition and your body. You will have to be very much aware of this in future, because what is healthy, normal, and a matter of course for your growing new psyche, for your growing new soul condition, is absolutely abnormal for your physical condition, your body, which is nature-born and moved by natural forces. In other words, your physical being will oppose the new soul characteristics. The growing soul will not be allowed any space. It cannot unfold. And so, in fact, you lead two lives, a soul life and a physical one, a life of the soul when we gather in the temples or immerse ourselves in the literature of the school or talk about the school and its work, and a natural life of the body. Do you see that in this way these two lives block each other and therefore harm each other? Isn't it obvious that such a situation will provoke physical complaints? The body will not be able to be one with the soul before it enters the phases of transfiguration. What is natural, what is of the body, will have to yield to the soul. May we draw your attention further to the fact that self-surrender, to which we repeatedly refer, also has a health aspect. For if you really practice self-surrender, it will greatly promote your health. Without it, as you should now clearly understand, you will have one trouble after another. Therefore, you will have to make your choice, an honest and positive choice. You cannot serve two masters, the Sermon on the Mount states. Either you decide to follow the path of the soul with all its consequences, or you declare that you are in the service of the body as it is born out of nature. It is either one or the other. A compromise is impossible. The path of the soul is, of course, the path of eternity. The path of the body is the path of finiteness. Theoretically, the choice is not difficult, and all of you will spontaneously choose the path of the soul. In practice, however, the situation is somewhat different, for the great conflict between the renewing soul and the nature-born body often results in such enormous tensions that theory is immediately swept aside by practice and will even be entirely forgotten if the tensions lead to a crisis. This situation is undoubtedly known to you. All physical distress, all physical needs and turbulences have their focal point in the cerebellum, the small brain. The cerebellum is in direct contact with the heart, the liver, the serpent fire, and the sympathetic nervous system, with the sacral plexus and the karma, with what has been accumulated in the auric being over the ages. The cerebellum controls the whole physical system via the spinal cord. To keep our physical system sufficiently under control, the endocrine system also plays an active part. For example, the pineal gland and the pituitary gland have a predominant influence in physical life. So the cerebellum governs the entire physical system, including the cerebrum, and consequently also the centers of willing and thinking. Let us now turn our attention again to the formation of the soul. In this process, the consciousness, the senses, the serpent fire, the sympathetic nervous system, the spinal cord, the heart, the liver, the sacral plexus, the auric being, and the endocrine system have to fulfill an enormous task, not to mention the blood, the nerve, and the other fluids, we will clearly understand that the pupil's growing psyche and his physical being will initially clash with each other in various ways. You cannot easily avoid such a conflict. So now let us get to the core of the matter. Let us assume that you have an inner conflict, and that this in turn accounts for conflicts with others. You are perhaps at loggerheads with dozens of people. The reason is to be found in yourself, in the great and intense conflict between your psyche and your physical being. In many respects, the head sanctuary is the point of encounter, the battlefield, where great pressure is continually brought to bear on the spinal cord. Some pupils then complain of intense pain in the back of the neck, accompanied by pain radiating to both shoulders. If they see a doctor about it, they are given massages or painkillers, or even injections, because the diagnosis is formation of cartilage, calcareous deposits between the various cervical vertebrae. This may be so because by the age of 3 months, the process of calcification has already begun. The formation of cartilage or calcification is a basic fact when we grow older. But if you, as a serious pupil, suffer from pain in the spinal cord, the reason is the conflict between the growing new soul, which is claiming its rights to an ever-increasing extent, and your physical condition. You will have to find a solution for this conflict, and you should not try, as many do, to compromise between your nature and the life of the soul. That is impossible. If you go on seeking such a compromise, you had much better leave the spiritual school. If you continue to cling to the conflict situation, it will be impossible for the eyes of the soul to open. You will live two lives which are continually at variance with each other and which prematurely destroy the body. The pupil who realizes this and sees the tragedy of such a situation sometimes tries to suppress the urges of his physical being and to fight against nature, which he would like to imprison in self-constraint. This is an expression of panic, anxiety, and the doubt that is connected with it. Such efforts invariably lead to greater conflict because what you suppress continues to exist and leads to still greater tension, and the delayed explosion will still happen. We would not mention these difficulties if there did not exist a way to avoid the struggle between body and psyche without violating nature and living unnaturally. In this connection, the universal gnosis speaks of the unfolding of the soul by means of purification. All who apply this method of living will be able to make the soul grow, to awaken the eyes of the soul, and so neutralize the greatest danger which exists for soul development. And the important thing is whether the pupil is a true seeker of the light or not, whether there is within him the great overpowering longing for a new state of life, because such a desire is decisive in this respect. If this enormous longing for the life of liberation exists in him, it will be a physical condition, a state of the man of this nature. The natural soul will then, as it were, groan for redemption. This condition and the ability to maintain it, even once the soul has already been born, is the key to purification. If natural man hungers so intensely for redemption, the focal points of physical life, which are concentrated in the cerebellum, will also urge in that direction as a physical need. That is why it is necessary for the pupil to gain control of the functions of the cerebellum, for him no longer to allow himself to be lived, no longer to allow nature to rule over him. He must be able to take nature into his own hands and gain control of the focal points of the cerebellum, of physical life. If he succeeds, the cerebellum will no longer be able to cause conflict with the organs and functions of the cerebrum, where, for example, the contemplation of things that are of the spirit takes place. In this connection, we refer you to one of the Beatitudes: "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." The process must begin with the purification of the heart. That is the key to the control of the functions of the cerebellum. When, by the purity of your heart, you have taken control, the two serpents of the Mercury ladder, Pingala and Ida, will bear witness of the harmony achieved. In this way, your body will retain its health to the extent possible. Look at those who have just found the spiritual school, who have been seeking for years and years, and who have experienced in all reality what it means to have come up against a brick wall, to have become stuck in this world. When they stand before the Gnostic revelation, they jump, as it were, with a shout of joy into the midst of the work of the school. Then take a close look at how this benefits their health, how an unprecedented harmony develops in their bodies. For after a long period of searching and having at last found, the heart opens in profound gratitude and recognition and embraces the gnosis. At the same time, through this intense yearning and the purification of the heart, which of course is not as yet consciously controlled, the functions of the cerebellum spontaneously come under control. The harmony of such a person, who was formerly seeking and sighing but now has found his God, floods through his entire organism and is of great benefit to his health. Many who have entered the school in such a state testify of this, saying, "I don't know what has happened to me, but I feel as if a heavy burden, which pressed me down for years, has fallen from me." On the basis of such true longing for liberating life and light, the self-surrender of one's entire nature will no longer constitute a problem. It is then simply a question of making this condition a permanent one. If you follow this course, your entire nature will be absorbed in this overpowering urge for liberation, out of sheer inner need. Then no physical organ will be able to cause any conflict. This, in brief, is the key to the purification of your entire natural system, as a result of which the soul will be born in you and be able to complete its journey to the dawn of resurrection. That is why one of the Beatitudes says, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." They will be confronted with their pimanda. With the eyes of the spirit soul as free spirit souls, they will enter the fullness of the manifestation of God. They will see God. They will know God. They will understand God. They will be united with the whole synthesis of the eighth book of Hermes Trismegistus.